In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Stephen's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
Coolest conversations time in Little Stephen's Underground Garage, presented by Hard Rock. I'm the Mighty Manfred. Thanks for listening. Please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. My guest today is Cindy Dawson, lead singer and frontwoman in the New Jersey, New York City band The Sins. Their cover of Neighborhood Bully is a recent coolest song in the world and part of the upcoming Gem Records release titled Gem Celebrates Bob Dylan. And that's part of an ongoing series that celebrates great songwriters, with previous releases focusing on the likes of John Lennon, Brian Wilson, Pete Townsend, David Bowie, and others. We'll listen to a bit of Neighborhood Bully, and then I'll be back with Cindy for your coolest conversations presented by Hard Rock in Little Stephen's Underground Garage. Mighty Manfred here, and I hope you are ready for our coolest conversations, because on the line with me now is Cindy Dawson, lead singer in The Sins, and their cover of Bob Dylan's Neighborhood Bully is our coolest song in the world this week. It's off the upcoming compilation Gem Celebrates Bob Dylan, that's due out August the 21st. How are you, Cindy?
Good, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm doing excellent. Very happy to be chatting with you today. Now, you know, I know you as the lead singer in The Sins, of course. But I was looking at some stuff online about you being a poet and a performance artist. But before I follow up with those parts of your background, where are you from?
Jersey girl, born and bred. I am your stereotypical born and bred girl who's... I've never physically moved out of Jersey. I've spent time in New York City, but mostly spent my whole life here.
And what part of Jersey?
I was born in Newark, and I live in Central Jersey now.
Oh, wow. Fantastic. The Garden State. You're all about the Garden State.
Yeah. If you go down the Turnpike, though, you don't think it's a Garden State. But actually, it's very beautiful in most of the parts.
Well, that is funny, because the first times I ever came to the city, of course, was up the Turnpike. And I was just like thinking of the irony of the state motto. But as you've said, many people have pointed out to me that once you're off that, it is really, really very, very, very beautiful. So did you grow up hearing Bob Dylan, or what was the music floating amongst the rafters of your home?
I'm the youngest of three girls. My oldest sister is 8 years older than me, and she schooled me on music because she was embarrassed that I had pinups of, like, you know, the Jackson 5 and David Bowie. I still love the Jackson 5. But she made sure that, like, she said, no little sister of mine is going to be listening to this bubblegum. So she schooled me on T-Rex. I remember listening to Tommy the Who, and she taught me the story of it. And I remember Genya Raven was in a band.
10-Wheel Drive?
Yes, yes. And my sister made me listen to that album over and over again. So I still love that album to this day. Love Revisited is another one I remember. I remember T-Rex, Bang a Gong, and of course the Rolling Stones, which are my favorite band. But I was schooled in really good music from the time I was really little.
And you said she was 8 years older. How old were you at the time when she was schooling you?
Oh, I was a little kid. I mean, this is like, she's probably let's see, she moved back in with us. I'm trying to, my family history is crazy, but my sister moved back in with us when I was about 13. Mm-hmm. So she was teaching me like all these bands at about the age of 13. I mean, before that, but then she left with my father. So I kind of had this one little chunk of time where I was listening to, like, you know, the music that I liked. You know, it was like whatever was on the cartoons on TV or, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So you, the Jackson 5, I think, had a cartoon in the early 70s.
They did. They did. And you know what? I still like the Jackson 5 to this day. I think they were really great.
Yeah, it's very, very catchy stuff. I love the Jackson 5. Yeah. Well, did you, were you growing up, you had this great music education coming from your older sis. Were you playing any instruments, or did that period of time were you sort of discovering letters and developing a love of poetry?
I was doing it all. I taking dance classes, I was always super active. But I actually started playing the drums, and when you got to pick an instrument in school. Uh-huh. And the boys were really mean to me. They did not want me in that class. And they actually drove me out of the class because they didn't want a girl in their drum class. But I think I would have been really good on the drums. I've got good rhythm. I cannot figure out a musical instrument outside of that to save my life. I see dots and strings, and two hands have to do something different on them, and it doesn't compute at all in my brain.
I'm sorry to hear about the drumming thing and the guys giving you a hard time. What was this like in elementary school, middle school?
No, I think you got to pick your instrument in seventh grade. I can't quite remember, but that was just the way it was then, you know? Girls didn't play drums back in those days.
What is this about you being a performance artist, poetry? How does this all play into your formative years?
Well, you're good. You do your homework. I started off as a poet. And I actually, when I was 17, I was in an all-girl band called Kamikaze Kitty and the Attack Cats.
I found that online. I was going to ask you about that. So, but yeah, is that, before we get to that band, so in high school, were you in other bands as well? Or was this what was the first kind of group that
you
were
in? That was the first band, and okay. It was a concept band. And at 17, I was attending Lee Strasberg Theater Institute. And so it was some girls that I knew from the school. And that band was actually it was a pre-Spice Girls concept band. We had really good backing, really good management. Stefan Israel from ICM, the first producer of MTV, was actually managing us. And that band did not last because one of the girls moved out of New York back to Texas. However, I was the one sent to this artist to have costumes made for us. Mm-hmm. And the band didn't work out, but this artist and I became very, very great partners in terms of creativity. And he knew I loved writing poetry. So he allowed the use of his loft and his own input and creativity to let me do some performance art there, where he would design these things called nudismos on me and paint them and hand paint them like a mermaid. And then my first performance art was called The Sea Serpent's Daughter. And it was like the cream of the crop of the art world back in those 1980s days. And so I would recite my piece, uh-huh, while I'm modeling this garment down a long runway that we created. And there would be a big screen where the photos that were done by Warhol photographer James Dean, these photos were flashed onto the screen telling the story as I recited. It was really cool.
Wow, that sounds wild. Yeah.
It was such a great introduction to the art world of Soho's heyday. It was incredible.
Did you describe did you say it was The Sea Serpent's Daughter? Is that what,
yeah,
you said?
I wrote this piece at 17, actually, called The Sea Serpent's Daughter. And then ended up at about 19, I think I was 19 by the time we actually brought it to his loft and did it as a performance art piece.
So did you have any other pieces like this? This sounds really intriguing. Was there a series of these things?
We did a series of performances more for him with the things he designed where I was a model. But I ended up becoming a poet, and I was a poet with a rock band, kind of like Patti Smith did. And so I would go around. I went as far as England on tours, Ireland, a lot of stuff in New York. I was kind of known in New York more as a poet than anything else. And we would, I would just, you know, bring the band with me and do readings, but do them with a band.
Right.
I never sang until Henry and I ran into each other again.
Okay, so that's, that takes us to our next thing, your guitar player, Henry Size. Tell us about Henry.
Henry is a multi-talented, multi-instrumentalist man. He's been in bands his whole life. He is somebody I knew when I was 15. He was a bit older, and I think he was 20 when I first went to see his band.
Oh, my God, ancient.
Yeah, I used, well, at the time, that's a big difference. 15.
It is, I agree, 100%. Yeah.
I used to sneak out of the house when my father went to sleep and go down the street to this bar that had bands, and I would steal my sister's ID. I don't know how they let me in anyway. I looked 12. And I'd go to see bands, and I really love that. I love that energy. I love that whole thing. And so I really first knew Henry from back in those days with the bands he used to play in back in the day. And then didn't see him for 15 years. We ran into each other again. I was working in a rock club, and he was, his band was playing there. Then we didn't see each other for another 15 years. You know, our lives just went on. And I ran into him again in Jersey City, where I'd been living. And he was living around the corner, and we didn't even know.
Let me ask you, I want to back up here for a second. So you were seeing him when you were quite young, when he had these different bands. Was it when you saw him in this, when you work in the rock club, is that when you actually made a connection to say, hey, I used to see you, or I'm trying to get
No, we were always friends, but it's just that, you know, life took us to different places. And
right.
It just felt like we were always running into each other again. So my friend called me up about 16 years ago and said, you know, I found Henry on Facebook, because he had gotten married, had a son, you know, he was busy doing that life. And I invited Henry to come see a performance I did as a poet with a band. And he asked me would I like, you know, a guitar player ever to, you know, work with if things didn't work out with the guys I was working with. And as it turned out, I did need a guitar player. And so we started doing poetry pieces together. And then he asked me, why don't you just sing, you know, what you're saying. And I'm like, no way, I can't sing. There's no way I'm singing. And in the beginning, and this sounds so silly when I think about it now, I used to make him turn his back to me when I sang. And little by little, I sort of worked through that. That was a big fear of mine, was to sing in front of people. And
you obviously you've been on stage for a long time, you know, performing that in your poetry and dealing with audiences, that interaction. What made you feel so insecure about actually singing?
Okay, Manfred, I'll tell you. So as an actress, I went to the best voice teacher. My agent sent me to the best voice teacher that you can go to. And his name was Sam Schwat. I will never forget it. He had a sign on his door that said, I can teach anyone to sing. And it was a lot of money for me in those days. I was like a waitress, a bartender. It was $100 an hour. And he stopped me midway through the class. And he said, you don't really make a lot of money, do you? And I said, no. And he said, I'm going to save you something. He said, because I got to tell you, he goes, you'll never sing. And I said, but your sign. And he goes, I'm taking it down. So I was told by people time and time again that I couldn't sing, but that's Broadway style singing.
Right. And I'm going to say to you, what's so funny to hear that is, I mean, you're covering a Dylan song, you know, I mean, Dylan's voice has its character and its charm, and it's the personality, and you know, he's not, certainly not showbiz singing. You know, I mean, he gets criticized even more so in the second half of his career about his voice and his singing style. So yeah, so man, I'm sorry that this dude was scarring you. This is horrible.
It's actually one of those things that I look at in life where had that not happened, other things may not have happened, because what I had to do was find, like, stop thinking about being a singer and not try to sing, but just be me. And when I got that kind of epiphany, like, oh, I don't have to be, you know, like, you know, Taylor Swift, or I don't have to have these notes that I hit. I just have to feel what I write and do it my way. And I think I would have never gotten there had I not been through the other things.
Well, all right, cool. That's I'm right on board with that. This sounds good. So you start, so it's Henry that pushes you to sort of, hey, that's, you know, we're doing the poetry thing. Let's do a band. Is that it?
Yeah. Yeah. He wanted to do a band. And I just thought, wow, this is really a challenge for me. And I love a challenge. You know, I can, turn poetry pieces into songs, and that would be really cool. I think like a musician. I can't play an instrument, but I think like a musician. I can come up with melodies and harmonies, and ideas. But Henry is really just brilliant at coming up with riffs. His nickname is the Riff Master. He's absolutely brilliant that way. And so, generally speaking, I may send him words and say, this is the vibe of the song. And he could send me a riff and I'll write to it. But then the two of us will get together every Sunday, as we've been doing for 16 years. And we'll have the basic skeleton and bones of the song. And then we start to put the melody solidly together. And I tend to be better on a chorus than a verse. And he also helps with words sometimes. We'll say, oh, that's too many syllables. If I have to sing backup, it's too much for me to play and sing. And
right.
I could fit the syllables as a poet. He can't always fit the syllables. So, we're a true collaborative team at this point.
Oh, perfect. Well, we're going to talk about a track of y'all specifically off of their Confess album. But first, we're going to need to focus on our coolest song in the world this week. And it's that version of Bob Dylan's Neighborhood Bully. And I should mention again, it's off this upcoming Gem Celebrates Bob Dylan compilation. It's like the latest in a series of tribute albums Gem Records has done over the last several years. And other artists, you know, with like John Lennon, David Bowie, Pete Townsend, Brian Wilson, Jagger Richards. Those are the ones I recall offhand. Album's out on the 21st of August. This particular tune, why did you decide to cover this song? Neighborhood Bully.
I wanted to do Everything Is Broken, but it was only fair that Henry got to pick the song because I picked the Bowie song that we did.
Oh, okay. What Bowie song did you do, by the way?
Can't Help Thinking About Me.
Oh, yeah, that's a great early song.
With the Dylan song, I said, okay, Henry, you pick. And one of the reasons he picked Neighborhood Bully was nobody had covered it before. Mm-hmm. So there would be no comparisons to some of the really good cover versions that are out there with Dylan songs. And I did not like it at first because it was 8 verses. It just went on and on and on and on. And it was a repeating melody that just never changed. It never did anything different. And only Dylan can get away with that. So I said, right, that's not our style at all. I'm going to have to change this up. And I immediately edited out 5 verses so that it would be under 3 minutes. And I changed the refrain just to make it a little bit more interesting in its delivery. And Henry added 2 really cool lead guitars to keep it rocking. And then I said, let's just have fun with this because politics, and I know why Dylan wrote it. Why Dylan wrote this song is not necessarily my version in my head for why I was singing it. I kind of wanted to keep it really nondescript, you know, more just like it becomes what you need it to become for you. And so I said, let's have fun with this because politics is just tearing us apart. You know, some of these politicians, they're all a joke. And so let's just do it almost sarcastically and do some hooting and hollering with it and make it fun. And we went into the studio, we produced it ourselves. And we went into this local studio that we often have recorded in, and we just had fun with it. We spit it out in 2 days, but we had well rehearsed it with the band. And I think it came out kind of sarcastic and fun, which kind of jives home the fact that politics today is often very ironically funny. Not funny in the way that you think, but just a joke.
Yes, about that, all that imagery from Idiocracy, I guess.
Thank you. You explained it perfectly, yes.
Yeah. So have you heard any of the other that's a great answer to the question, by the way, explaining the tune. The other songs are on the compilation. Have you heard any other?
Oh, all of them. Yeah, all of them. You know, we get the album before anybody else does. And I just think everybody did a great job. I'm not saying that because, you know, they're on the label with me. There's some great, great versions of these songs that are so original on this album.
You know, my favorite on there, outside of your present company, of course, just another track that's really great to me on there, is the High Frequencies version of Subterranean Homesick Blues. What do you think about that?
I called Lisa the minute I heard it.
And that's Lisa Michaels, right? Lisa Michaels.
Yeah, we just actually stayed at their house. We played with them in Virginia a couple weeks ago. And I said, this is fantastic. It really was a cool version of that song. And it's different than any other version of that song I've ever heard. She's just gorgeous. And everybody falls in love with Lisa. Men and women, we all fall in love with her. She's beautiful. She's sweet. But she's multi-talented. And yeah, they did a great. And Tom turned out to be one of the most rocking men I've ever met. Tom was crazy out there. He was so good in the shows that we did with them. But I love their version of it.
Oh, speaking of shows, remind me now, is the next gig for you guys for The Sins on Saturday, August the 15th at the Parlor?
Yes, we actually were supposed to play in Rochester the week I came back on the 7th. They had a fire, unfortunately, and the gig was canceled because they're closed for repairs now.
Oh, no. But you do have this gig coming up the 15th.
Yes, we do, with the Bickersons. And I believe it's Rhode
Island. Where's the Parlor? I couldn't figure it out.
I believe that's Rhode Island. So many shows I really often confuse. You know how that is. You start to confuse where you have to go. I just look at my calendar for the week. And
so do you know where it is where it is in Rhode Island? What city?
Providence.
Okay. Yeah. But, and so you play out fairly frequently, and it seems like, was it last year you were doing shows overseas in London or?
Yeah, this year too. We also went, we went to London this year as well. Again, we've been to Sweden 3 times because Stockholm rocks and I love playing there and I have a lot of friends there. We are hoping to get to Spain at some point. That's still in the works. And where else? We may be going to Scotland. We just don't know. Like right now, my schedule for next year isn't confirmed and solidified. These are just things that are in the works right now.
Well, I hope you have great success overseas as well as with these continuing shows here stateside. We can play another track, and I'd like us to hear the cut from your album Confess, came out earlier this year, also on Gem Records, 6th album overall. But the song is called Heartbreak Time. What's the story on putting that together?
Our first album on Gem was Little Miss Lost, which was very autobiographical, and Confess kind of took off where that album left. It's just a lot of purging, a lot of letting out, a lot of angst and stuff that has needed to be let out. Our next album will be a lot happier and more fun. But Confess, where Little Miss Lost was more like my life growing up, Confess is more just a view of the human condition and people and good and bad and just observing and relating.
And specifically for this one, is this one where you had stanzas that you adapted for the song already, or was it something that the two of you wrote, like you wrote the lyrics as he was putting together the music?
I had written this song. It was in a song lyrics notebook that I keep. And every once in a while, we try to do a song and it just isn't working. We just put it away. We're like, okay, it's not working. We're just not coming up with anything. And what we come up with is bad. It's cheesy. So we put it away. And then I was looking through my notebook one day and came across these lyrics. And I said, you know, I really like these lyrics. Let's give this one another try. And it just worked that day. It wasn't meant to be maybe a few years ago, but it certainly was born that day. And we really liked it. And it was kind of written about like how, you know, when you're breaking up with somebody, but you really don't want to, you know, you're just in that place where you're like, this isn't working. And you're trying to say, you know, things that are mean to each other. And then you're like, wait, before you walk away, don't toss the bait. You know, you really don't want to leave. You know, why do we do this? And it was that kind of a song.
Cindy, as we get ready to spend heartbreak time, let me thank you for speaking with me on Our Coolest Conversations.
You're very welcome.
All right. Here's The Sins off their album Confess with Heartbreak Time and Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Live your lie and I'll live mine. We'll pretend from time to time, no heartbreak time. No heartbreak time. Be my friend and I'll be yours. Never again will our paths cross. That heartbreak line. That heartbreak line. How to my love.
We're feeling that heartbreak time from The Sins just now here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. The track is from the album Confess, came out earlier this year on Gem Records. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to the band's frontwoman, Cindy Dawson, for speaking with me today on Our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Kurt Baker for producing our podcast. Scheduled to hit the Great White Way next year is a Broadway musical, The Wanderer, which tells the story of Dion and his music. Joining me to talk about the production is cast member Diego Andreas Rodriguez, and the actor-singer is my guest next time around for Your Coolest Conversations presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Buddy, you're a boy. Make a big noise playing in the street. I'm gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace, kicking your can all over the place.
Some things are better when they rock. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos rock around the clock with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pools, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida. We will rock you.